Clay, I normally come up with something to talk about at the start of these episodes, and I cannot come up with anything to talk about. I'm going to make it a very meta podcast where I admit that I don't know what I could lead into this episode with, except for the fact that its original title was Mnemonic, which is neither interesting nor insightful about anything, but...
Just unrepress some of your memories to think of something.
It's true. There goes that one.
How's it going?
I'm thinking about the ice cream I had for dessert. Yeah,
all I can think about are cheeseburgers I've eaten over the years.
Hey, everybody. This is Johnny Mnemonic, the podcast. We're here to talk about retrospect yourself before you retro-wreck yourself. This is the latest episode of Voyager.
That's actually the better title than Mnemonic, actually.
This is Retrospect, the 17th episode. Wow, 17th episode of the fourth season. Came out on February 25th, 1998. We're almost catching up with ourselves, but it's gonna happen. Teleplay goes to beloved Brian Fuller. Brian Beloved Fuller and Lisa also here. Clink. Story credit goes to Andrew Shepherd Price and Mark Gaberman, directed by Jesus Salvador Trevino. In universe date 51658.2 2374. In retrospect, Seven believes that a visiting weapons merchant assaulted her.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
It's a day in the life story. I mean, I guess off the top, I kind of like this one, I think. I think the patrons are all over the place on it. Yeah. I thought this felt like a sort of good warmed over TNG episode in a lot of ways. It reminded me strongly of TNG. I guess I was just happy that there was a Voyager episode about something. And I was like, this is fine. Like, this is okay to watch. It felt a little bit like warmed over TNG in that it didn't feel as clean as TNG can get when it does that stuff really well. But I thought that it wasn't bad. It has some issues that I'm sure we'll get into in terms of like how they go about telling the story that they're telling that leads to a few little quirks for me. But I thought it was like, I don't know, it held my attention and I was happy that it was about something. I think it's a good Star Trek episode in that I can see why a lot of people disagree or have like conflicting opinions about it. But
sure.
I thought it was perfectly serviceable as an episode as I was watching it. And like a better one that sort of felt, it was nice to have a drive with an episode of Voyager every once in a while. And I appreciated the drive. So where do you want to start off with this one?
Yeah, I appreciate the swing on this one. I think it's pretty messy as far as I would agree. I feel like it's a lesser version of something they do on TNG. The thing that was most fascinating to me actually was looking up stuff about it afterwards and seeing how the response to it has shifted as far as what it's about over the past 20 years or so. Cause you know, they're playing with some interesting, hot topics, quote unquote, the issues to a certain extent. And, I thought it was good in that, yes, it was about something and everybody had a pretty clear drive as to where they were going. I actually was kind of caught off guard as to where this was going. Cause I in my notes, I had like three different things I wrote as they were happening, assuming that's what this was about. And then once it actually got into the meat of it, I was like, oh, okay. This is not exactly what I thought it was going to be. So, I would say it's definitely one of the more,
expected Voyager. I think you can tell me if this is what you thought. Expected Voyager script to me would have been Seven was assaulted, this guy stole some probes, and then Voyager has to like chase him down to get them back or something like that. Like that seems more traditionally in line with what Voyager would want to do with a story like this.
Yeah, I feel like traditionally Voyager would be a lot less complex with with the story they ended up telling, and it would probably be something a little bit more straightforward. Maybe that's what caught me off guard too, because once they got into things, I was kind of, although about halfway through, I figured out how it was going to end, and I was pretty much right. I can't decide if it's a cop out or not, but I'm sure we'll get to there.
Yeah, in terms, I guess we can get to that. I don't know if I want to bring up a issue I had with it right away. I think it does before we get into like the meat of it. One thing that it does do is something that I talked about in some recent episode where I thought that the character selection of the story was wrong. And I kind of feel the same here about this. This is not the Seven story. I think I might have said this about the previous one. I feel like this is a B'Elanna story that they gave to Seven instead. Okay. Because I understand that like the Borg aspect of Seven is what makes this want to do something, but you can come up with some sci-fi bullshit about why B'Elanna is the one that they want to do it to. I found that this was messy for me in how easily manipulated Seven was to become angry about something that when she's set up as a character to me who's like semi-data-like in that there, it's very difficult to provoke an emotional response from her. She might feel something, but it's not an easy thing to do to her to get something. Yeah. The doctor just kind of whispering in her ear gets her to, in my opinion, overreact for her, the character that she is, where I can really see B'Elanna immediately jumping to a conclusion in a way that Seven seems harder to push.
I don't know, because the deal with Seven is that she's unfamiliar with her emotions and how they work. And so I could believe that her not having a full understanding of how they work or how to use them is therefore a little bit more naive as to how to control them or how to not be controlled by them. My issue is that I think they don't focus on the doctor enough, because I think ultimately this is more of a doctor story than a Seven story. And I know that's frustrating on a certain level because it's about Seven being violated. So you would think that the focus would be on her. But if this is going for more of the repressed memories, satanic panic kind of thing,
yep,
I think the focus should have been a bit more on the doctor and that manipulation between the two of them, even though he's coming from a good place. And I think what's tough is tying this stuff back to her. I feel like it becomes... Seven becomes the wrong character once they try to explain everything. Once they tie it back to, you remember being a Borg and assimilating other people. That's probably what's going on. I was like, I don't know about that.
Right.
So I think you're
getting confused. Yeah. This happened to you. Yeah. Yeah.
So I kind of go back and forth on whether or not she's the right character for this because of what they're trying to focus on. And that's where I think it gets kind of messy. Is because I think some of it is going for the repressed memory thing. Some of it is more of a victim dealing with her experiences thing. And so it all kind of gets a little bit muddy, which is not necessarily a bad thing to have something like this because it's a very messy situation. But yeah. I think it clouds where they're trying to go with it a little bit.
Yeah, I think I don't like it being Seven because, well, it's really a repeat of what I just said. I find her, if you want to go down the doctor path of the doctor being the one that's sort of like whispering in her ear and confusing her, I don't think that the episode or the show effectively sold that this is something that would manipulate Seven that way. Like they try to write it into it of being like, this is exactly what happened. This is what you said, like the Borg did this and you remember that and you've, you know, put it on top of your own memories and this is the thing that came out.
Yeah.
I think that you need someone who's a little bit more prone to emotional manipulation, which B'Elanna seems to fit that characterization better to me. She's someone who, if she thinks she's been wronged, will more willingly latch onto the idea and the emotion, because the emotional display is part of that character, the way that she's supposed to be written. Like the Klingon thing is supposed to make her kind of hasty you know, like predisposed to assuming the worst almost in some ways. And Seven, you know, I guess they want it to be jarring, like when the doctor does a little scan thing and she's like, what's going on? And it just felt, it felt out of place for me. And but at the same time, I'm not totally like against this idea of like Seven's history and Seven learning and grappling with her emotions is supposed to be the problem with it. It just felt to me like in an episode that was trying to go in a whole bunch of ways, they didn't spend enough time making me want it to like believe that Seven is reacting appropriately to the situation.
I think the tough thing with this story is based on the story that they're trying to tell, you can't have Seven really be responsible for anything that happens. And that becomes tougher to do with B'Elanna because she is so strong-willed. With Seven, if you were to do this story as it's done here with B'Elanna, I think you'd be taking a lot of agency away from her because she would be so manipulated. And I think they are taking some agency away from Seven, but it's a little bit easier to buy because she is more of a like naive,
childlike in that way. Yeah.
Yeah. I think if it's B'Elanna, your focus probably stays on her more and is more about her anger fueling the events. Whereas at the end of the day, Seven did nothing wrong in this situation, right? And that gets tougher to do with someone who's traditionally a lot more stubborn and sure of herself, like B'Elanna is.
Yeah, I...
But it's at the same time, though, it's like that. That's kind of the problem, too, is because, like, Seven's mind is one of her big strengths. And so to have the resolution of this episode kind of be like, yeah, we don't really know how your brain works. It might be kind of weird. Like that's feels a bit loosey goosey for me. also to just accept it too is kind of weird.
Yeah. Well, I can see Rational Seven accepting it. I would expect Rational Seven to push back a little bit more at the start of it, I suppose. So that's the conundrum with it, but it is funny because it's the doctor had been so sure in that meeting with Janeway. He's like, this is science, motherfuckers. Like, I know exactly what happened to her. Yeah. And then at the end, he's like, well, I guess I didn't know anything about what was happening.
It's kind of one of the things I wanted to talk about. Because I was curious where you came down on this, is whether or not this is an ambiguous episode. Because I feel like by the end of it, they're making a pretty clear stance as to what they think happened or didn't happen.
Yeah.
But towards the beginning, you still have stuff like the doctor talking about that there was something in her brain blocking these memories that has now been triggered that wasn't there before. So that happened. It must have happened, right?
Like, and you're assuming that he's correct. Like we're assuming that he's correct.
Assuming he's correct, yes.
Yeah, which is fair. I think it being ambiguous would make it a worse episode, actually. Yeah. I think it needs to come down clearly on what the problem is here, because like you were saying, the changing perception of it, I think it's difficult nowadays to not view this as a Me Too kind of episode, where it's one of these things where Star Trek does this a lot, which is that violation sort of equals rape. Like they've become synonymous with each other. It's like if a character is violated, either telepathy wise or any kind of science thing, it's the metaphor always seems to be that it's rape. And I'm not entirely sure that that's fair all the time. I think sometimes it's like a male character could have the same thing done, but no one would say it was a rape that happened to him, even if it was like Chakotay who had this thing done.
I think they could. I don't know if the show would do that, but I think you could do that.
I don't think the audience would go in that direction. Like, it's Troy is a classic example of this. There have been, like, every time that would happen to Troy, the commentary is that it's a response to it's a rape metaphor.
Sure.
But I can think of a lot of Star Trek episodes where someone has been captured and had, like, brainwashed things, like, violated right. in that sense. And no one goes, Geordi sure. got raped in that episode by the Romulans. It goes, well, not really. That's just kind of a thing. Sure. But the Me Too thing weighs heavily on this one. But I only see this as an allegory of the repressed memory stuff of the 90s. Like, it's yeah. purely a commentary on that, which is that, like, your memory is unreliable. People who claim that you can sort of, like, learn the truth by going through some kind of, like, psychotherapy thing. And that, you know, like, back the story for people who aren't from it was like just back in the 90s, there were a lot of cases of like this pseudoscience of repressed memory stuff started getting out. And a lot of it was dealt with a satanic panic. It was a lot of little kids who were sort of being telling these tremendous stories about like being abducted by their family members and tortured and sexually assaulted and stuff. And of course, none of it's true. It's just the fact that the process of getting to repressed memories tends to prime kids to tell things right, like that yeah. because they're like, tell us, are you sure no one touched you in the woods? Yeah, leading questions. Yeah. Kids don't understand. The kids want to impress the people that they're talking to. So they tell stories. Gullible adults think that this is believable and stuff like that, and this is working. And I only see this episode as that. I think viewing it as a Me Too thing is actually kind of a distraction because it's not really the point of what I think they're trying yeah. to say here.
It's tough though, because like the way that they play it, it doesn't feel. I was reading that you know they went out of their way to not write it as a sexual situation.
Yeah,
but it kind of feels that way. The way
took
that
the sexiest character that everyone keeps talking about.
Yeah, I know,
is so
right?
Sexy. Yeah, Harry Kim's like.
That's one of the tough things. Is like you take Seven of Nine and the way that they play out the scene with her and the guy when she kind of punches him that first time, it has that feeling of like, you know, he's a little bit too handsy with her sort of.
Yeah,
like there's definitely that kind of element. It's coded that way a bit. Whether or not that was the intention of the writers is up for debate.
Yeah.
So that's where it gets tough to separate. And yes, I think watching it now, you immediately go to that reading of it, which I think is a very different discussion, because then it turns into, and I think part of the trouble too is the repressed memory thing. Generally, I think my understanding of it was a bit more time was involved. Like it would, I think the first one was
separation between the events and the recall
yes,
of the
like
memory.
I think the first really. One that popularized the whole thing. I tried to look it up, but I couldn't remember the names. Was a doctor who was working with a woman who unearthed all of this childhood trauma and child crazy sexual assault and black masses yep. and all this kind of stuff that happened when she was a kid. She's doing this as an adult. This thing happened like 12 hours ago on this show.
Yeah.
And so it's a little bit tougher to square repressed memories, which generally means something that's been in your head for years that you've pushed down with yes. an event that happened like less than a day ago.
Right. That other people were around for too.
Right.
It's kind of, yeah.
So it's more natural that you read it as she was assaulted. She tried to tell somebody about it. And also you're getting obfuscated a little bit because of the sci-fi nature of it, right? Where
yeah.
it's because it becomes a repressed memory because he forced it to be repressed.
Right.
You know, and so that's, I think, where it gets a little dicey depending on how you want to read this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, the sci-fi aspect doesn't really help all that much, does it? I guess in either case, whether or not it's the Me Too or it's the repressed memory thing, I do like the episodes, and I largely agree with the episode's point of like due process kind of matters. Like what the episode is saying is that like you can't get caught up in the emotion of these things. It's kind of like there's like you either can prove that something has happened or you can't, and a lot hinges on that. It's not just the word of someone, be it a Me Too thing or a kid talking about sexual assaults and like bringing everyone under like the gun in terms of the law. I liked that. I do agree with you that like in either of those cases, I think that the, well, Seven's naivete works better for much better for me in a non Me Too story. It works much better as a repressed memory where she's kind of like ignorant as to what this kind of means. And like, because I feel that works better with what the doctor is doing in this episode too, which is that he kind of has, you know, he's kind of peddling in pseudoescience a little bit. Like clearly doesn't know, he doesn't know what he's talking about. So it's weird that he's so sure of it. That's the other sort of weird sci-fi thing, but it just fits much better as a repressed memory thing than the Me Too aspect does, because I just don't, I wouldn't buy into the Me Too thing. It feels very like it, if you're looking at it through the Me Too lens, it feels much more, well, like aggressive, I guess, of like a takedown than the repressed memory type thing. I don't know. I feel like the repressed memory just kind of works better in how they've set up Seven and the Doctor to go through this storyline. And the sex thing kind of distracts me from that, and I don't really like it. But I understand that they try not to make this intentional, but it comes across as that way. So.
Yeah, and I think what doesn't help in either reading, honestly, is at a certain point, they basically just dump Seven's whole point of view. Yep. Like it's once they come to the idea that they have evidence that corroborates the other guy, they still haven't pinned it down totally. But from that point on, it becomes basically like, no, you're wrong. Yep. Which is, I think much more aggressive if you're reading it as a sexual assault thing.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty rough.
Yeah, it just feels too, it's not dismissive, because they're not dismissive of her. It's just that it feels, it's hard to put into words about it. It becomes, if it, the repressed memory feels a little bit more innocent in the fact that when you sideline Seven through the story, the sexual assault thing feels like that's a real abandonment of the character, if that was the case of what you're talking about, where the repressed memory feels less so. It's more of just like Seven kind of had a brain malfunction, essentially, and the doctor kind of is like, oh, I should have handled that a little bit better. What did you think about the way they set up the guy, Caven or whatever his name is, the weapons dealer?
Which is fun because the guy who plays him, this is crossing over all my current interests, is the guy who is the recurring character of Jessica Fletcher's nephew on Murder, She Wrote. Oh, okay. And basically every episode he's in, he gets accused of murder. So it's pretty in line with him. I like it up until the end. Because again, I think the way that it ultimately ends with him is playing and is presenting ambiguity where the show has clearly made its decision as to what's going on.
Where do you see the ambiguity? Yeah.
Specifically in the way that he dies.
Runs away. Oh, okay, where he dies,
yeah, where he flies off and then he turns around and he starts firing at Voyager and then his ship blows up. Like they...
Yes.
I feel like they are trying to pepper in the idea that maybe he was guilty. And in the way that he goes out, I feel like it reinforces that, where it's like, that's a pretty intense thing to do for someone who's, you know, innocent.
He should have been executed, right? The accusation
that's
should
pretty
have happened
fucking dark too. Yeah.
But that's much more of a, because they're trying to have their cake and eat it too, by him firing on Voyager. They become less culpable when they just fire back and say like, all right, now he's dead. And that's,
well,
the
they don't
it.
Fire back though. That's the whole thing.
Right.
He just blows himself up somehow for a weapons dealer. Yeah. I wouldn't buy weapons from this guy because they constantly malfunction.
His final commercial was not a good one for himself.
Yeah.
I think that he, I think if this was a planet that was very aggressively, It's funny because he's an arms dealer. You'd have to come up with some way. If they were very Law and Order and the accusation was enough to have him executed or something like that.
Yeah.
I feel like that ties more into the repressed memory thing of like, your accusations ruined the lives of someone here. And like the danger here is believing that and like not going through what they want to go through.
Well, they throw that in, but they never pay it off in that way. Like he has that line where he says, you know, my culture is more concerned with foreign diplomacy or whatever.
And oh yeah. If
I was even accused of this, it would be the end of my career, the end of my life or something. So they throw it in there to excuse his actions. But even so, I feel like I think you're probably right. I think it probably holds more weight if he does come back and it's the kind of thing where like Janeway is like, yeah, we have reason to believe he's innocent. And the guy's like, it doesn't matter. We got to take him anyway.
We've made our decision. Yeah. Yeah. I feel, if I'm remembering I'm sort of preempting some of the patron comments, but I don't mind his portrayal early, which is that he's kind of a sleazeball, because I think that is an important part of what the episode is saying, which is that like, and Bill James kind of makes this argument in his popular crime book, which I really love. One of my favorites is that like Bill James makes the argument about like the flawed way that our court system works is that the court system relies quite heavily on narrative and it wants people to buy a story about things.
Yeah.
And in his ideal version, it's much more of a evidence scale, which is that like these are things that definitely happen. This is what we know. How can you best arrange your facts within, or how can you best determine what was likeliest thing that happened based on the facts that you have? And I think that him being a sleazeball plays into that criticism of the trial system, which is just like you're prejudiced against him because he's an unlikable character. So like the fact that he is a shithead gives fuel to the, well, he definitely did something because he's quite unlikable. And I bet a really unlikable person like him would have done something. So I like his setup, the way that he's done. I don't like him running at the end. And I wish that had been handled better. I don't like him running away.
He definitely has a temperament that would get him elected to the Supreme Court in the 21st century. And I was kind of thinking about that a little bit, because that was always my thing with all the Brett Kavanaugh stuff, was like, let's say, okay, give the guy the benefit of the doubt. Whatever they're accusing him of, he didn't do.
Yep.
Based on the way he reacted, I don't want him judging anything.
Yeah, that's the counter to him.
You know, when he's up there and he's like talking about getting revenge and stuff, this is not what I want. Like, it could, at the end of that thing, the people giving him, you know, the Senate could have been like, you didn't do anything. This was a test, and buddy, you failed. It was a temperament.
No, it's always partisan bickering, but there's always like that question was out of lines. It's like, I don't think there's such a thing as an out of bounds question for one of the Supreme Court justices.
Yeah.
It's like, your part of your job is handling things like this. So
if you ask him something and he loses his fucking mind, maybe he's not the best person for the job.
Not the best temperament to go.
And so, and I, you know, here having him clearly they're trying to pepper in stuff that would make you think, oh, maybe he did do this.
Yeah.
But at the end when he runs away, like from that point on, from the point where he dies through the end, they're pretty, what they're presenting is he's innocent. But I think the way that they kill him off is trying to preserve a little bit of, well, I guess we'll never really know. And I just, that doesn't jive for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see the argument there. I guess maybe the writers would make the argument that he's been so unjustly prosecuted to this point that he's kind of lashing out. And it's like, this is what he thinks is the only way to go about it. I think it's undermined just by, because I think the show is trying to portray Voyager as heroes at that point. So they're like, no, come back. We lied. Like, we recognize we lied. And I think that the episode would hit a lot harder if that realization kind of came after his death or something. Like, there's a...
Yeah.
They're trying to have the characters not be so totally immoral that they are pursuing him until the point where he dies as kind of like an unjust prosecution. They're trying to say that they realize the error of their ways, and if only he had listened to it, you know, like that things would have been better. And I don't think that's particularly fair for him as a character, the way that they're presenting him as he did not do anything in this story.
I kind of feel like that's also why I wish there was a bit more emphasis on the doctor. Because if you're looking at the repressed memory stuff, right, that stuff, at least the way it started, and I'm sure probably as it went on, was there was a lot of the doctors being the ones who are fostering that stuff specifically for their own good and their own success. And I really like the way that the episode starts with the doctor, because he talks about, you know, he's very full of himself. He talks about learning psychology to take the place of a counselor. And the
I feel like they're refocusing on that. Sorry, not to interrupt. I feel like they're focusing on the doctor's arrogance more than they have recently. It's like they it feels like they want to rekindle that as a character personality.
Yeah, thing. Yeah. He's been very toothless for the for a while, and seems
pleasant
like they're giving
a
bit of very pleasant. But the first scene where Seven starts telling him what happened. I really got into his reactions there, because they made total sense to me, because Seven is talking about the violation of her individuality and all this kind of stuff. And he's getting really fired up about it. And I was like, that makes perfect sense, because he has presented through the show this desire for this humanity, for this individuality outside of being an EMH. And so him being very intense about that, and that being triggering for him, makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And so if you kind of followed that trend and had the doctor be the driving force which he kind of is, but he falls back a little bit once everybody else gets involved. But if you had him be the driving force for this, and you know, he's on the bridge driving everybody forward to get this guy, and he ends up getting killed. And now it's like, this is all on you, buddy. You know, this is, this is, has nothing to do with Seven. Seven is should be blameless in the situation. She's just doing what you managed to pull out of her, and you're manipulating that. And so I think that would make the ending with him work for me a little bit more. Because it's, I was kind of taken aback that at the ending, the doctor's the lesson that he learned before he goes to Janeway was, maybe if I just don't deal with any of this, you know, like Seven has to deal with the murder of, or not the unintended death of this guy because of what she thought happened. And the doctor's like, yeah, that sucks, but you got to deal with it. But I might not have to.
I should just erase these horrible, horrible memories.
Like I kind of wish there was a scene where Seven just like chewed him out at the end of the episode. Being like, you know, I didn't know what was going on. I was dealing with these things, and you pushed me, you know, give her a little bit more agency in this instead of just being the person leveling the accusation and then sort of being along for the ride and ultimately told that she was wrong and really have no recourse to argue it.
I don't disagree with that. I feel that's an argument for my B'Elanna point. I can see B'Elanna being upset that, and I would have liked that. I would have liked to have seen that little feedback thing, or like the show obviously isn't interested in the interpersonal conflict between those characters, but I do feel that that's a moment for where those two characters should be angry with each other about what's going on.
Cause also, I mean, to argue for Seven in this situation, I think she has an argument with the doctor at the end that like, this only happened because you pushed me into using these emotions. If it was up to me, I would have addressed this very rationally and very logically and very coldly, but you forced me to do this more human, in a more human manner. And now somebody's dead.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, you know, not necessarily 100% true, but it is in and of itself a rationalization of what happened.
Yeah. I was trying to think, because the kids with the repressed memories, it kind of escapes culpability. I guess if they're adults, but certainly the kids who were coerced and told lies are less culpable than a grown adult in the same situation that should think about things more clearly.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that helps. I don't think that really helps the episode. The doctor, the other thing that maybe it's implied, but they don't really fall back on is the the doctor kind of violates his Hippocratic oath here as a doctor. Like he does more harm. Yeah. So it's that's another angle on him, at least as a doctor, about whether or not this was appropriate to do. But
how would you feel? I saw someone online on some message, maybe it was Reddit, I can't remember, suggest a different read on it where instead of Seven being actively assaulted, it was something that she thought she witnessed. Like say she thought she saw Coven kill somebody or something like that.
Yeah.
And so that way it wasn't a direct, then it becomes much more focused on the memory. You get yourself into like a Dario Argento situation where it's like,
right,
you think one thing, but then it turns out to be another because your memory is not perfect, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Yep. Yeah. I guess the Trek has done a few episodes kind of like that. There's that one in TNG where Riker is on trial and he tries to tell his perspective on the frame of mind or frame of events, or matter perspective, or whatever it's called. Here, I think I prefer Seven being confused about, like, I think it's important that Seven be much more of, or whoever this character is, be it B'Elanna or Seven, is much more of the one who suffered potentially whatever they're claiming to have happened.
Sure.
It gives it a little bit more, because otherwise it's very difficult to drive Seven to anger. It's be like, you didn't see that. She's like, fuck you, I did. Like, it's true. Just kind of like, yeah, well, I did, so I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anything else about this one? That was, I feel like it was a good discussion, which is maybe a hallmark of a decent episode, but I only have final thoughts. I don't have anything specifically else about this episode, except to say that, I found the Coven's, alien makeup to be unsettling for some reason. The
very
little bar
much so
down the middle.
As I've mentioned before, the makeup that is just like holes on the face, I find very upsetting.
And what did you think of, I guess Voyager doesn't get the weapons in this, but what did you think of Voyager seeking out weapons? It's not touched upon. Yeah. It's just kind of a thing.
That was interesting. Yeah, I
and
guess
Janeway's,
they don't,
negotiation. They don't get those guns. No, they don't get the guns.
Yeah, I was trying to square whether or not Coven was doing this illegally. Because it never comes up again. So I assume it must not be something that was explicitly illegal to do.
He's got a whole lab that the government knows about, I guess. Like, yeah, it's just, I thought everything about it was funny. He's like, this is my giant space quarter that I'm going to shoot with the missile. And when it goes through it, you're going to know exactly how much damage this can do. I thought Tom Paris shooting his little like plasma machine gun was funny. Like
that thing, 100%, that thing was a vacuum cleaner. Like when they pushed in close, it's like, that's like a Dyson vacuum, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, in retrospect, name of the episode.
There you go.
I guess it's a good thing they didn't get those weapons. Cause again, I would not count on them to work.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Cause I thought that's what was happening at the end of the episode with his ship. I thought the deal was, oh, he's going to fire this super weapon that he was trying to sell Voyager, but then it just blows him up because he doesn't have it configured right or something. But it didn't seem to be exactly that. My only other thing, I thought Tuvok was really underused here.
Yeah, he is.
It's because they have that one scene where you've got the classic three-character positioning of points of view where the doctor is like, it's very much repressed memories. Janeway is like, all right, let's take this seriously. Let's investigate. And then Tuvok's like, you know, human memory is famously unreliable. And as soon as he said that, I was like, yeah, it's a shame they don't have anybody on the ship who can read minds.
Yeah.
Like, does this not get
brought up,
cleaned up with a simple mind meld?
Yeah.
Instead of searching the lab, or while they're searching the lab, he should have been like, Coven, come here for a second. My mind to your mind, baby. Let's figure out what's going on here.
Just sticks his fingers right in those holes in his face and just right there.
Blech. Play him like a flute. You think if you blow in his mouth, yes.
Record, you can play Happy Birthday in his face.
I'm sure Kyle will appreciate that video.
I think Tuvok was, I wasn't even thinking the mind meld. I should have, but I thought Tuvok was underutilized just as they, maybe wasn't underutilized. I thought he was very effectively portrayed as the due process, like the counter arguments what the doctor is talking about.
Yeah.
And I like that. Obviously that fits his role.
Speaking of him, well, Star Trek and again, Murder, She Wrote. I just recently watched an episode where Rene Auberjonois plays a Southern detective dressed like Colonel Sanders the entire episode. It's very good.
He comes up to Maine to visit?
No, she goes down to Louisiana.
She goes down to Louisiana. Gotcha. Did I have anything? No, not really. It kind of tickled me a little bit. There's the scene where Janeway and Tuvok are like looking at the evidence and Janeway's like, this could go either way. And Tuvok's like, I also believe this could go either way. It wasn't the most subtle writing of the episode. All right, then we're done. We'll go to Patreon thoughts. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Patreon.com/ThePenskeyFile is the best way to support the show. You can leave comments on upcoming episodes like the ones we're just about to read. You can also listen to 200-plus podcasts that are on the podcast feed at Patreon.com/ThePenskeyFile. So, excuse me. Excuse me. Hope I'm not getting sick. I feel like I have a little tickle in my throat here. Hold on.
Hey, my voice is still shitty. By the time it clears up, I'm sure you'll have fucking avian bird flu or something.
Do you want to read, or is your voice broken at this point?
I can do a couple short ones.
I'll send short ones. All right. So Kyle Barrett says, retrospect. Oh boy, a false rape allegation episode. Fun times. The accuser in these stories needs to be respected, but Seven here is more of a passenger in her own tale, told what to think throughout, given stink eye from Janeway, instead of exploring the years of actual abuse she suffered by the Borg, manufactures a false accusation. She's used to jumpstart the doctor's predicament, which is great and has some meaty implications, but there has to be a cleaner way of getting to that story. The writing all feels a bit manipulative and very unsubtle to trick the audience, making Coven an awful guy in the first few scenes, so even if he hasn't abused Seven, you get the sense he's turned the idea over and over in his head like some disgusting rapey pancake. I do think there's interesting stuff to mine from the episode, specifically with Doctor, but it also feels very awkward, very 90s, and morally skew whiff. 2 leaf blower phasers out of 5.
Yeah, a leaf blower. Yeah, it could have been that too, yeah. Yeah, I, excuse me. Choked on my own air there for a second. Mm. I thought the look that Janeway gives Seven at the end was a little bit, I how did you read that? Because she kind of shoots the doctor a look that's a bit more angry. The one that she gives Seven is a little bit more neutral, but still doesn't have, you know, great implications behind it.
Oh, okay.
And that was one where it's like, again, I feel like there should be some more consideration for Seven here, given everything that happened, you know?
That's fair. Yeah, I can't remember the look. I would agree and also say, like, it felt odd to me that the doctor and Janeway get the final scene. Didn't feel right. Like, I think the doctor has to have a scene, but he feels like he should be the second to last scene, and then you go to Seven at that point to see how she feels about it, but they chose not to. Tax Albert says, retrospect, a good episode. Borg technology being a hot commodity makes sense, as does Voyager needing better technology in the long run, in addition to the shuttle and photon torpedo replicators the ship apparently has. We get a bit of that with the astrometrics lab, but it would have been neat to have the ship change more visibly over the course of the series, reflecting a change of attitude amongst the crew. Grappler John Zorn says, retrospect, I find it odd that in an episode that includes punching a guy who happens to have 10 nostrils on his nose, I can't tell if it's supposed to be about Me Too or due process. After watching it twice, here's the best conclusion I can draw. You should always believe women who say they've been raped, encourage them even, especially if they wear tight cat suits, because girls like that are just asking to have their nanoprobes harvested, if you know what I mean. Be sure to double check all the evidence just in case the douchebag you accuse is just a douchebag, and if you accidentally kill the guy, be sure not to blame the victim. Just blame yourself for watching this show. 1 out of 5. You know it's bad when you find yourself missing Neelix.
1. Wow.
Changeling says, retrospect, now I need you to go ahead and close your eyes while I tell you this story. Picture in your head a little girl on an away mission to pick up some weapons for her starship, but she gets blasted by a phaser rifle, strapped to an operating table, and repeatedly has her nanoprobes along with everything pure and Borg about her extracted from her body by an alien with 10 nostrils. Now imagine she's white.
Yep.
3 space Harvey Weinsteins out of 5. I have to cover that one on the Patreon at some point.
That's a time to kill, right?
Yeah, time to kill.
Good crossover with Prisoner Podcast. Patrick McGowan plays the judge in that one.
Yep, the Southern judge.
Hamming it up with a nice Southern accent.
You caught on to the joke quite quickly on that one. I have to admit, when I saw that one in email, his punchline got me. Point Extra G says, retrospect. Sometimes an episode tries to make a statement about an issue, but somewhere in there the message gets muddled and you're not quite sure exactly what it's trying to say. Maybe I'm looking at this with a Me Too era mindset. I don't think writers in the 90s were envisioning things from the 2020s, but it's still difficult to decide exactly what they're meaning with the story. Is it to always believe women? Is it to do due diligence? Or is it that simple accusations can ruin someone? Is it about properly dealing with trauma or from this sort of thing? Maybe it's simply saying that things like this are always a very messy and unfortunate situation. In good intentions, accusations, defenses, and desire to find the truth and seek justice where it needs to be sought after, often gets in the way of each other.
I do think referring to it specifically as a Me Too reading is a little disingenuous, only because, and I think this goes to the problem with how it's laid out, is that, I mean, it's not like rape didn't happen in the late 90s, you know? So I think it's easy to read it that way at the time, as easy as it is now, but obviously it's a lot more of a hot button topic, literally everywhere now, but I think you could still read it that way back then. So that's why it gets a little muddy there too, as to what the actual intention is.
Yeah. I don't think I've said it clearly, but I think that the Me Too aspect falls apart because the worst aspects of Me Too involve deliberate attacks on character, using assault as a sort of made up excuse to ruin someone. Really, right. Like, you know, it's right. Like every day I read stories about some guy gets out of prison after 10 years because the woman who claimed that he raped her like recanted her statement, and it's like, okay, so it's like that. That's the downside of it. It's much harder. I can't think of a Me Too where it's like you're not sure what happened and you just like accuse people of rape. That doesn't seem like it makes a lot of sense in the way that the repressed memory thing does. So I think the only thing that makes it Me Too-y is
go ahead.
Well, the only thing that makes it Me Too-y is if you insist that this is a rape metaphor. It moves more easily into the Me Too angle, but I don't think it ultimately sits there the best.
But I think the thing that still does apply is that, you know, there are many, many women who do come forward with accusations that are then ultimately not believed for various reasons, whatever, what have you. And I think that can apply here if you wanted to as well. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be a malicious lie, you know?
Yes, I think that fits better as a 90s rape allegory than Me Too shifted that. Me Too shifted everything the opposite way so that accusations are now enough and you immediately upon making an accusation it's believed that something has happened. Like, who is that?
Okay.
You know, like that, was it the Rick and Morty creator that had some accusation and then they dropped all that? You know, it's like it's the accusation is enough in the Me Too era or at the peak of the Me Too era where Seven's accusation would be enough to get this guy justly or unjustly. I just think it's confused because, again, she doesn't know what she doesn't know. There's no intention on her part. There was the other one. This just so many examples. There's that baseball pitcher. You see that story recently?
No,
he's like a 28-year-old baseball pitcher or something, and he brought home a girl. She claimed he raped her. The team cut him. And he hasn't played in the majors for the past couple of years because the courts take so long to go through the process. And they can't say anything during this period because it's like part of their defense is like that they can't explain what they know at that point. But then, you know, he loses peak MLB career earnings potential. And it comes out in trial. And it's just so like she has texts to her friend where she takes a picture as she's sleeping next, he's like asleep next to her and the girl takes a picture and sends it to a friend and the text is like, I met like a millionaire baseball player and I'm going to take him for everything he's got. And it's like, you just fuck this guy in peak of his career. And it's like, you just can't get to it. That's what That's why I think the episode is actually worse as a Me Too, because there's that nastiness to that angle that the episode doesn't really need to have in this repressed memory situation. And
sure.
I prefer it that way. I read Poindexter's, right? Yes, I did. I don't know who that baseball player's name was. Matt Alex says, retrospect is a surprisingly good episode. Juri Ryan did a great job portraying vulnerability and traumatization in her soft-spoken scenes with the doctor. It was a pleasure to always see Detective Tuvok. Is he? I guess he is kind of Detective Tuvok in this. And scientist Janeway even makes an appearance with the microscope in sickbay. It was also prescient of modern cancel culture while being accused as all it takes to be ruined. Plus, Tom Paris confirms that Ferengi racism is alive and well. 4, let's add some nose bumps and call it a new species out of 5.
Honestly, you know, I know the nose bump thing gets a lot of hate. I don't really mind it that much. Like, it's, I understand that it's kind of lazy, but like, come on, we're meeting a lot of people here. Not everyone needs to be reinventing the alien species face makeup wheel, you know?
Yeah. I don't know what it is about the makeup that makes the nose prosthetic the one of choice. It must be easier to attach to the head or something.
Yeah,
it must be, yeah. Because you could. It's never the ears or like the chin or anything like that. It's always the nose.
It'd be nicer to see a few less white aliens with nose ridges, though.
Yeah, there are none that are.
The Delta Quadrant seems to be pretty fair skinned.
Just can't have them all. Be dark skinned, because then what's that episode? The Tasha Yar fights the black people episode, Code of Honor.
Oh boy.
Jaron Hatch. Are we at Jaron Hatch? Yeah. Jaron Hatch says, retrospect. The first time I watched this, I remember being meh on it. Second time I watched it, I thought it was a poignant reminder about the necessity for due process. Third time I watched it, I thought it sent the wrong message about not believing women and hated it. This time now, I think it's actually pretty fucking solid. In retrospect, I wonder if I'd watched this show too many times and it's now melted my brain. 4 stars that will probably become 2 on yet another rewatch out of 5.
I will say I think this is one where it probably benefits from watching it twice. Because I think, you know, I was kind of all over the place as I was watching it, and I didn't really kind of settle on my take on it until I kind of shuffled through it a bit again and kind of revisited some scenes to see exactly how they played out. Yep. So watching this one again, knowing how it all comes together, I think is probably beneficial.
Yeah. Well, Jaron ended at least on a 4 out of 5 at this point. In retrospect, Matt Ross says, retrospect, okay. The repressed memory is frustrating more for the doctor thinking he's onto something. Maybe the doctor can be renamed chief investigator. I just wish the Voyager got the super duper gun and was a hodgepodge of parts at the end, but no. This has similar feelings of TNG as a matter of perspective, but why the crew didn't use the holodeck instead of the heavy-handed repressed memory BS is beyond me. You can see the plot a mile away, and kudos to good acting, but the story was missing a consequence for Seven and the Doctor that lasts longer. Like, hey, you remember when you destroyed a person's life, leading them to die? 3, no memory of this ever out of 5.
It's not Seven's fault, though. You know, I don't think she deserves a comeuppance or anything.
Seven doesn't. The Doctor
deserves
more.
Right, the Doctor does, yes, but yeah. Not Seven.
Arturius says, retrospect, a pretty solid episode, but one that seems to be generating mixed feelings from people. Perhaps all of us are one of the members of the crew in this story dealing with our own preconceived ideas about how this should be handled. As for myself, I think it's a good reminder that we shouldn't jump to conclusions, and thank God we have the innocence until proven guilty, no matter how despicable we may find the crime or the person. Yet a good episode if it is provoking these types of questions and challenging our personal emotions. It did what it was supposed to do. 4 retrospective thoughts out of 5. I think that might be one of my favorite rating puns. Malo Perverso says, retrospect, another shitty and pointless Voyager episode, clearly serving as a poor analogy for rape/sexual assault and the traumatic effects on its victims. Miss Thin 7 in this case, 2 out of 5. And then, why did it go back?
That is interesting. Like, I find it so fascinating how the reading changes.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know if that's a failure on the part of the writers to be more explicit with what they were going for, because it does get a little bit muddled in the sexual assault allegory.
Yep.
But
I just don't think it fits into the, someone brought up the common, the believe all women thing. Mm-hmm. Just because the point of it is that you can't. Like the believe all women thing is just mistaken. Like obviously mistaken. It's like you don't believe, it's not just women, you don't believe anybody. Like you don't take anybody at their word for anything if there's like a lot at stake about it. The due process, as people have mentioned, is what matters about it. I think that the seven thing, like, and the episode itself is not, they're not believing seven.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They believe
they actually handle it pretty well, honestly.
Yeah. Like until
they get to that point where they have clearly made their own decision that what she is saying is untrue, even though they don't know that for sure. But the episode from that point on plays it as though that is what happened. That what she said is not true. But up to that point, like that scene with, like I said, that scene with the three of them, with the doctor and Janeway and Tuvok, I think Janeway's approach is pretty good, where she's like, I'm going to believe her that this happened and I'm going to support her. But we need to do an investigation to see what exactly happened.
Yes, I would have just said, I would say I'm going to be sympathetic to her claim here. I'm going to investigate her claim is a different thing from saying I'm going to believe her in what she says, because I don't think Janeway believes her. Janeway is just sympathetic that if this did happen, this is a terrible thing that we need to suss out. Do you think that Voyager's crew should have been more unfair to the guy, or do you think that this is pitched appropriately? Like because as you're saying, I think looking back on it, they do a pretty solid due process investigation of what's going on. They don't go over the top, I don't think, in what they do. Like they're looking for evidence. They're going to try to find out what they do, and they do eventually. But there is a way that they could have relied much more on the doctor's pseudoscience and been like, well, the doctor has never been wrong about anything before, and like this clearly happened. But they don't really take that approach with it at all.
No, they don't. No, it is fairly, like, that's what's so weird about the guy freaking out is because like they've not done anything unreasonable up to that point, and then he just pulls a gun on everybody.
that's true. Last comment is JC Superstar Retrospect, part after school special, part Title IX company mandated training video, 2 out of 5. Thanks everybody for your thoughts on Retrospect. I think that felt like that's a wide swath. We didn't get any fives, but we got a couple fours and a couple ones, I think. So that's the sign. That's the sign of a quality episode of Star Trek. Thanks everybody. Patreon.com/Lipensky File. Clay, on our scale of 1 to 5, what are you going to give Retrospect?
I'm going to be a coward and give it a 3. I think it's definitely hold your attention. I think it's, an interesting idea that it is not quite refined enough to really work, but it's a good swing.
Yeah, I think it's a 3 as well. I think it's a good 3. I think it's like it's a nice 3 for Voyager. I think
I would like, even, you know, regardless of where you come down over whether or not the moral of this is something you agree with or not,
right?
I 100% would recommend this over 80% of the other episodes we watch. Just for the sake of, you know, well, you're going to get a good conversation out of it. I could tell you that much.
Yeah, it's kind of reminiscent of Tuvix a little bit. Like it's one of the rare episodes of Voyager that feels like it's like, oh, this is like kind of thoughtful in a way. There's like some thought that's been put into it.
It's attempting to be thoughtful at the very least.
Sure, yeah. It's attempting to be. It has an idea and it's thinking about it, which maybe is the better way to say it, which is good, which is fine. You get 26 of these episodes. That's all I expect out of a Star Trek episode, is just make it look like you're thinking about something. That's it. Thanks, everybody. Me and Clay will just go right down the line, sit on the fence with the patrons battling it out below. We'll give it a 3 out of 5 for both of us. That's Retrospect. Patreon.com/Lipensky File is the best way to support the show. Clay, do you have anything you want to say?
Check out the Rotten Horror Picture Show on Patreon. Myself and Amanda are covering the Halloween series, which has been fun so far. And on the regular show, Wes has been sitting in with us while Amanda's on vacation. He did Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, And then my cousin Danny, who runs the film noir website Shadows of Noir, is joining us for Night of the Hunter. And then Wes will be back for another one for episode 99. Right before our big 100th episode, we have to figure out what movie you and I are going to do for episode 99. But sure. I'm sure it'll be a banger, whatever it is.
You had floated some zombie movie, I think, which is fine. I had never heard of it, but I can do that if that keeps things on track or whatever.
Sure.
Nothing. Water off a duck's back, as they say. Any of the because that's not it's on the list, right? It has to be a movie on the list with that one.
Yeah.
So that's it. There are 200 good horror movies, right?
I think so. I think based on the fact that by episode 100, we've done, what's 100 divided by 5? 20?
Mm-hmm.
20 wild cards that I think are just as valid to go on the list
than any movie that's on there. So. Yeah, I was just thinking just... after that episode I did, I was like, well, I guess my criteria is like, does this belong on the list? Because I would have to assume there are 200 good horror movies that would belong on the list. It's just an argument against when I'm like, I don't think this movie should be on the list.
Honestly, I've found the sci-fi list to be sparser than I expected.
Oh, really?
Just because I feel like I glanced at it once and I was kind of surprised that it was... reaching
it ran
further.
Out of gas so quickly.
Yeah, it runs out of gas a bit. Yeah,
interesting. I haven't looked at it recently. I would have argued the opposite.
I could be completely wrong, but you know what? I'm sticking to my guns, and I'm gonna make you kill yourself.
I feel
could be wrong, but I'm not at this moment right now.
I'm remembering watching Dream Warriors for the podcast and. I don't like it. I don't like how it's making me feel. Clay is holding me down, forcing me to watch Dream Warriors. I feel that the maybe
Welcome
this
to
this
time,
is a problem.
Prime time, bitch.
This is a personal bias about sci-fi. I think I do feel that the sci-fi list is there's a little bit more variety, and you can have a little bit more variety within the sci-fi genre than the horror genre allows, just because of the parameters of what the genre kind of entails.
Sure, yeah.
Horror is a little bit more limited. There's still tons of different ideas, but I feel like some, maybe I'm wrong about that, but it feels a little bit more expansive for sci-fi. You go like, is that a sci-fi? I guess it is technically, but it's still a different kind of movie.
That's sci-fi is an interesting. Genre delineation, because I feel like there's a lot of movies that are just like dramas, except they've got like hologram watches or something. And
you
it's
could
like,
be like
oh, a sci-fi.
A family of farmers in the 1800s, but they have a ray gun, and it's like, it's a sci-fi movie. So it's in the future. That's it. Thanks everybody for listening. Patreon.com/ThePenskeyFile. We will be back next week with it's a two-parter, Clay. So we have to remember that.
Ooh,
it's the kill. Okay. What is it called? It's called the
Killing Game,
I think.
Is this the World War game. the Nazi one?
This is the Nazi one.
All right, I got to check in with Murphy. I think he said he was interested in doing that one with us.
We can see if Sean wants to do it. I think it's the Hirogen take over the holodeck.
Oh boy.
I think that's what it is. So
okay.
We'll bring Sean on because he had talked about he wanted to, or he's very interested in when we get to the Nazi Hirogen episode. So that's it. All the hot topics, Me Too and Nazis, just that's one good. After the other with Star Trek Voyager.
Thanks, can't wait to see what the hot take about the Nazis was from 1998.
It'll be tough to say that I don't think they meant Nazis because I think they are wearing Nazi uniforms in it. So it's tough to make the argument that it's not. Thanks very much. We will see you next week with The Killing Game, parts 1 and 2.